Stevie Weeby here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to the Andy Cooper, a.k.a. Andy Cat, from the group Ugly Duckling. I heard about Andy when I went to Arizona State back in the day. My DJ homie Alex had the Fresh Mode record single, and I was obsessed with it. I made him play that over and over and over again. My favorite part of Andy's interview was when we were talking about Christianity. I didn't know that he was a religious guy, and we spent a good half hour talking about that. And I also like the fact that he is basically an encyclopedia when it comes to hip hop, and he knew every single rapper on my Tribe Called Quest Midnight Marauders poster. So I was very impressed by that, and it was one of my favorite interviews, and I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome back to another episode of The Stevie Weeby Show. Ladies and gentlemen, this episode is sponsored by Purple Mattress. Right, Bryce?
Right.
Okay. We have a very special guest tonight. Please welcome Andy Cooper, a.k.a. Andy Cat, from the group Ugly Duckling.
What was the name of the piece that was just played?
I just made it up. I don't really know how to play. I play basically the same kind of piece every time. I just kind of improvise. Yeah. I just try to rush through it. Yeah. I'm so honored to have you, man.
Really?
Oh, dude, let me tell you something. In mid-90s, my friend had the Fresh Mode, either the 12-inch or I think it was even before the EP, and I just made my friend play that song Fresh Mode over and over and over again.
Were you really into the underground hip-hop scene in
Big
L.A.?
Big time. Yeah. Big time. I grew up watching Yo MTV Raps, and sure. I idolized the Beastie Boys,
sure.
Far Side, Dell, Boogie Monsters.
What about the local, the LA scene, like all the Jurassic 5, Dilated Peoples, all that kind of stuff? Did you go to those shows?
I didn't really go to their shows, but I knew who they were, and I bought their albums. I always bought like whatever I thought I could buy, like whatever I thought I liked.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today because... you know, there was that's the scene out of which our group came, and I feel like we were a minor player. That the big groups were Dilated Peoples, Jurassic 5, and Black Eyed Peas. They were Black Eyed Peas grew to be such a worldwide phenomenon. But it's interesting the point you make about early '90s mm-hmm. stuff. I feel like the late '80s, early '90s, the Yo MTV rap era,
yeah.
like you said, you know, Far Side, A Tribe Called Quest, mm-hmm. De La Soul. That kind of collapsed under the weight of the pop hip hop groups like the Puff Daddy and Tupac.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say Kid and Play.
Well, we're just when hip hop went mainstream.
Oh,
the
right,
gangster
right.
stuff, Outkast. So they're all the kind of artsy underground, all of us had been in groups and we were hoping to get signed to a major label or something. But
yeah.
once the gangster stuff took off with, The Chronic and Cypress Hill and whatever it was, we just were like, well, nobody's ever going to sign weird groups like us.
Yeah.
So the independent hip hop scene where all these groups had their own labels, and you said you had bought a 12-inch record, like we just made that down the street here on La Brea and put it out.
Well, you made that around this neighborhood?
Yeah. So it was just...
This is crazy.
But because there was no alternative to going to whatever Universal and our groups were kind of more of the artsy hip hop approach, and that was totally out by that point. So
you guys, man, like one thing about Ugly Duckling and the crew where he's from, they're freaking live show. That's one thing my friend told me. He's like, oh dude, I saw him at a bowling alley in Gardena somewhere. I'm like, what?
I remember
yeah,
that.
Dude, you got to see him live. I kept hearing, see him live, see him live, see him live. And then...
And I think I rolled like 170 that night too.
Really?
I mean, I'm not that good.
But
that was a pretty good score for me.
No, you're up there. I
think I've ever broke 200.
In high regard. Like when I think of
bowling wise or hip hop wise.
When I think of the trio here,
I could get on them.
Okay, I'm thinking of these guys, right? MCA, rest in peace. Ad Rock, Mike D. These guys, I looked at them in the same regard. I think I thought of you guys as the Beastie Boys, but a little bit more jazzier and sure. smooth.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love the Beastie Boys, but yeah, we really like the Tribe Called Quest and, you know, the Beatnuts. And,
yeah, love the Beatnuts.
Brand
yeah.
Newbie and all those kind of real jazzy, soulful
yeah,
groups.
Yeah, yeah. So. How did you link, how did you meet the other band members?
So when I went to high school in Long Beach, and we all grew up in Long Beach, and, you know, I was part of a little group in high school that was just, we never did anything really. Mm-hmm. But one of the guys introduced me to Dizzy, and both Rodney and Dustin are they're 3 and 4 years older than me.
Oh, they're older than you?
Yeah.
Oh,
so I was the youngest one.
Shout out to Dizzy, Dustin, and Young Einstein.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they'd already had some equipment and Dizzy had relationships with some people. Like he knew MC8 and the Chill from Compton's Most Wanted well.
That's like.
So they were older and knew more things. So they kind of had a few things going. So when we all three met, I'm a pretty creative person. So I kind of talked them into letting me get involved and we started developing the group and. That was, you know, over 20 years ago.
Dang, that was over 20 years ago. That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
But you guys have, you know, they've toured the world several times. They've done shows with practically anyone you can name back then, right? Like
absolutely.
So how did?
I mean, not like Fleetwood Mac or anything.
Not anyone you can name, but. But you guys have toured like. Europe several
Absolutely.
Times, Japan, everywhere.
Yeah, I think the total, we got over 40 countries. I think that was our, what we hit.
This is just Tobias, the camera guy right now. When you go home tonight, look up Ugly Duckling, look up their discography, and look up some of their live performances. My favorite one, you guys are performing, it's on YouTube. It's the whole 45-minute set. It's somewhere in Europe, man. I'll hold up. I can't think of it, but it's amazing. Like, so what do you think about the music out like today, as far as what's popping and stuff, as far as trap rappers or whatnot?
Well, I try and be respectful of artists, and there's a lot of really talented artistic people. But with hip hop, I feel like the era from which we came was far more musical. And because not just hip hop culture, but celebrity culture, smartphone culture, and all of this, things are really quick burning, and it's more about developing and creating a brand or creating shock or controversy. And that's always been part of music, but I feel like it's so emphasized now that there's not really that much time to really get into a band. And I'm sure you've had experiences. Anybody of our generation had experiences where you really lived with an album or a group for 6 months, a year, and you felt like you had a real connection. And I don't feel like that's probably as typical today.
Yeah, I met one of my heroes, Prince Paul, at Comic-Con, and I just kept telling him, like, oh, man, like, De La Soul, that's the type of, like, I like, really put that in high regard. Like,
absolutely.
I can name several others, and I don't feel the same way, like, nowadays. Kendrick's cool though.
Sure.
You know, there's only a few, I think.
And it's hard to sometimes it's hard to know whether what we liked was so good or we were just in an age where, you know, music means so much when you're 19 years old or whatever
it is. I still listen to it though.
Sure, me too. But you know what I mean? The emotional impact and connection to the artist might not be as easy to
Make that connection.
Yeah, it just means so much when you're younger because you don't have your own identity yet. You're not in the world.
Yeah, that's why the Beasties really stood out for me because when I saw, you know, Fight for Your Right and then going on to Paul's Boutique and Check Your Head and then meeting Money Mark and doing music with Money Mark in the future, I was tripping like just working with Money. I was like this fool was in the Beastie Boys and like I didn't know how to act around him for like the longest. But yeah, this is his sampler. And I still have to give it back to him. So
did you check out the Beastie book?
Yeah, it's funny you brought that up, Andy, because I love the Beastie Boys, and you know, like I said, rest in peace, MCA. But Mark was, people don't know this, but Money Mark was so heavily involved with the Beastie Boys, like it, especially with Check Your Head and other albums, that the book's like a Bible, right?
Yeah.
And they only mentioned him in a little paragraph.
Yeah, I noticed that. I actually read the book.
Oh,
I
got you it, noticed that?
I got it for, and I'll say, I thought it was even more odd. They mentioned him only very slightly. And to be fair, the book's really well done. And it's a lot of comical nonsense in it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a lot of music. But they never once mentioned DJ Hurricane, Mixmaster Mike, any of the DJs, which I thought was so strange in that they were such an integral part of the group. So there's, I think, I guess you can't include everything, you know, so.
Well, I know personally, like, that line, from here to Gardena, you know, that line's about Mark.
Sure.
Because Mark, at the time, lived in Gardena, and when they were, like, around this area, wherever, Mark would lug all of the gear, the drum sets, all the instruments, like, so they could record that album.
Yeah, it
but
seems
people
like
people don't know that. So.
It seems like the book really emphasized kind of the earlier part of their career, like the developmental time. So,
yeah,
but yeah, what do you think? Was Money Mark hurt by that?
You know what's funny? It's funny you're bringing this stuff up, because this is the stuff that I really want to talk about, and it's funny that you're bringing it up because I haven't brought it to Mark's attention yet. And please,
Bryce said we can edit any of this stuff out at the end. It's okay,
Bryce. Yeah. You don't have to edit it, but write this down. Do a Money Mark part two. Yeah, because I need to give him a sampler back, too, as well.
What else can you order Bryce to do? What's on the list of?
He's my lieutenant, put it that way. He's a trustworthy guy. He's actually a really good guy, and I trust him. Yeah, I could leave him in my apartment for a month, and I won't even trip. Go ahead.
Too trustworthy. I don't want to be that trustworthy.
No, I trust you. So let's go back to Andy Cat, because I'm so excited he's here. Man, you guys have recorded so many classic albums, concept albums, like Meat Shit. You know, just it goes on and on. Like, what was the process like coming up with these albums, and like, how did you like come up with this stuff to record all this stuff? Like, how long did it take you also?
It would depend on which project you're talking, but usually they took quite a while because...
Like the Meat Shake one?
Yeah, I mean, those things usually took 6 months to a year because we were very much a sample-oriented group, and we also wanted to make really interesting music. So to find samples that all matched, or at least were close enough tone-wise and that had all the song structure elements that we liked, it's a really tedious business.
It's
a lost art form now. Sampling's kind of gone out. And
I still love it.
Yeah, some people still do.
That's how I learned. Samplers.
Yeah. Yes, and I still work in the medium, too. I love it.
Yeah.
But because we really wanted to compile... Like we liked none of the groups, the production groups, like A Tribe Called Quest, or who else is on the Jungle Brothers are on
Jungle
there.
Brothers. Those are one of my favorites.
Sure, Public Enemy and the Bomb Public Squad. Enemy, these really really dense
Heavy
sample.
D and the Boys.
That's right. You got Kumo D.
Kumo D.
Mixmaster, Grandmaster Flash.
Is that Dougie?
That's Dougie Fresh.
Ice-T. Oh, MC Light.
De La Soul.
Pasta News.
Flavor Flav. Busta Rhymes.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those guys, huh?
Jungle Brothers, though, like that's did you grow up listening to them?
Absolutely.
specifically
the Jungle Brothers.
Like what album like really stood out? Like
A Tribe Called Quest or the Jungle Brothers?
The Jungle Brothers.
All the first two especially. And actually, you can imagine this. I was a massive fan of the Jungle Brothers, and then when we got a record deal in like 1999, we got sent on a European tour for 2 months with the Jungle Brothers on a bus.
Damn,
so imagine,
dude. Wow.
So I just, that's all the questions I ever had, all, you know, okay. And actually, and to your point about Prince Paul, same thing. We did a long tour with Prince Paul. And so all these kind of questions about De La Soul or the Handsome Boy Modeling School, whatever it was, because I'm kind of a nerd.
Yeah.
And I want to
know
all
your
the
stuff.
Details.
That's why I was like, oh, he knows his stuff because you used to have cassette tapes and stuff like that.
That's right. So, we got to do that tour with them, and it's just like, I just peppered them with questions. And they weren't
on the tour bus.
Absolutely.
Wow.
I was not really into decadent rock and roll excitement. Yeah. I just wanted to know, like, that's, you know, how did you get so much sample time on Straight Out the Jungle? There wasn't sampling technology available at the time that you could do full 8-bar loops. How did you guys do that? And they were like, well, we actually just you used to play it straight off the record into the mixing board and then loop it every, you know, eight bars and just keep,
I love what you're doing right now. Dude. This is like my dream situation. What, you know, whatever you're doing, you could talk 3 hours like how you're talking and I would just like keep rolling. Can I ask you a question personally of my, the Jungle Brothers? Cause I, the album that sticks out to me is, the 40 Below Trooper. Mm-hmm. And there's two songs.
Is it called JB's with the Remedy? Is that the name of the album?
Yeah. That's one of the songs. It's Spittin' Wicked Randomness. Mm-hmm. There's that song, another song. Like, were they on like hallucinogenics or something? Because like when I listened to it at the time, I'm like, oh, these guys are like a psychedelic tip or something.
There was an urban legend about them that they confirmed me that they had recorded an entire album that was much stranger than that. Oh. And the label said, no way. So that particular album was kind of like a dialed back version, but they had really way out stuff.
Wow.
And Africa, he was really upset because he felt like what they were doing was more in line with like the Prodigy and those things that got mm-hmm. really big in Europe. Mm-hmm. And that because the label thought it was too strange for a hip hop act,
they wouldn't
release it that way.
That's the stuff I like.
Yeah. And even their single off that album was produced by Q-Tip. I can't remember the name of the song, but it was a more typical, it was a good song. But it was a more typical hip hop song, but the album was supposed to be kind of a bug out electro kind of crazy thing. So they never,
I love that album.
And that, they kind of came from dance music.
I'm in love with Indica, that one too, where they're referring to a woman, but it's really weed.
Yeah, or my.
You know about this stuff, Bryce? You got to look into this. You got to look up Ugly Duckling, Jungle Brothers, and all this stuff.
My
okay?
Jimmy weighs a ton. That's the song.
That's a great album. So like, I love that you're here because like, I feel like I'm talking to an encyclopedia. Like, what other groups directly influenced your guys' sound? Like Ugly Duckling sound. Like, where did you guys, who'd you guys look up to?
Well, this guy right here, Diamond D.
Oh, Diamond D.
That was, he had an album called Stunts, Blunts, and Hip Hop.
I remember that one, yeah.
Which was as good as you can do with regard to sample production. I mean, really well done, funky, original sample styles.
Yeah.
So with him and the Beatnuts and, of course, A Tribe Called Quest, those were the groups that we just thought sounded the best. So we wanted to make, like you point out with Ugly Duck, we wanted to make.
I just put it together. Go ahead. I just
really
put it together.
Interesting,
though.
Jazzy, cool hip hop.
I think of your guys' as Fresh Mode the same way I think of Beatnuts' Intoxicated Demons. Mm-hmm. It's just a tight EP.
Yeah.
You could play over and over again. We have to do an ad now. I'm getting into it, man.
Did you write that down? Intoxicated Demons?
All right,
Demons?
Yeah.
Bryce, did you write that down?
All right, so.
Tonight.
Now, a message from our sponsor, Purple Mattress. I've been sleeping 14 hours a day because it's so dang comfortable sleeping on this mattress. Look at the material. It keeps you cool, too, because you see these cubicle holes? This keeps you cool while you're sleeping, and it feels like a gosh darn gummy bear, okay? So make sure, if you want to sleep as good as me, get this Purple Mattress, okay? You get a 100-night risk-free trial. If you're not fully satisfied, you can return your mattress for a full refund, backed up by a 10-year warranty, free shipping and returns, free in-home setup, and old mattress removal. You're going to love Purple like I do, okay? And right now, our listeners of the Stevie Weeby Show will get a free Purple pillow with purchase of a mattress. That's in addition to the great free gifts they're offering site-wide. Just text on your phone, text the word Stevie, S-T-E-E-B-E-E, and send it to 84888. Again, get on your phone and text the word Stevie, like it is on the show, S-T-E-E-B-E-E, and text it to 84888. Try your Purple Mattress today. You won't be sorry. Message and data rates may apply. Love you guys. Now back to the show. Yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you out. Like, so other groups that inspired you guys?
Well, yeah, just I would say when I look at all these groups, I think of this as the production era in hip hop, where whether it was Gangstar, you know, DJ Premier was the guy, or mm-hmm. Pete Rock. Mm-hmm. Where if you think about it, one thing that was great about this era is every group had their own sound because they produced themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas now artists usually work with the hot producer. So at the point in hip hop, or at this point in hip hop, think about it, like EPMD sounded like EPMD. A Tribe Called Quest sounded like a Tribe Called Quest. It was like a band.
Yeah.
Whereas now if it's Drake or something, he's like, he's going to be, there's going to be a producer and he'll be on different people's tracks. And so Drake's a talented rapper, but does he have a signature Drake sound?
No,
nobody does.
Doesn't.
That doesn't exist anymore. So,
dude, how great was that insight?
Learned stuff, yeah.
Dude, that is so cool you said that, because I've been doing my own music for years and it takes time, you know?
Can you tell me about the Stevie sound, what it's like?
It's directly, okay, it's, you guys have influenced me as well. You guys.
Can you play me something? I want to hear some Stevie.
Yeah, okay, I'll play you something right now. This is, thanks for, I like what you're doing. This is the latest project. I'm going to give you this album as well. This is called The Nephilim. It's about giants.
Oh, I know about that. It's a biblical reference.
Yeah.
The Nephilim, yeah. What effect are you using on the vocal to give it that kind of sound?
This sounds
like it's two vocals at the same time, but
yeah, I ad-lib the second part to do a higher pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I do all my production. I produce all my albums, and I do all my production on this thing,
mm-hmm.
the Boss SP-303 Doctor mm-hmm. Sample. And so I learned how to make beats on this. The Roland MS-1,
mm-hmm.
and I was so sad because this thing died on me, but it was so cool because you could put batteries in
mm-hmm.
it. So I bought this off a DJ in Arizona. He was DJ Yellow Jacket. He was from New York, and he actually hit me to a lot of the New York, like I didn't know who Mobb Deep was.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't know like a lot of the East Coast cats, and then he had vinyl like in his dorm room, and I would just study the vinyl. Like I learned about like the Indelible MCs and, oh, Black Moon's one of my favorites, mm-hmm. Gravediggers and Master Ace and groups like that. And so I'm glad that I met at ASU. I met like I grew my palette of like, oh, okay. I Wu-Tang obviously,
sure.
But yeah, I learned from, yeah.
So do
these,
you like the Black Moon? They kind of had like the filtered sound where they would use drum loops, but it'd be real crusty and real like I said, the filtered glazy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. I really, that's what I think is missing. I love that dusty kind of, sample. I'm not great at like making my own breaks. I can make my own break beats, mm-hmm. but I like my whole, method is I try to loop the tightest break beat that I can perfectly. And then with the rest of the buttons, I try to like infuse like different samples that it's maybe complementary sampling
mm-hmm.
where one might not work with the other, but I'll spend like 8 hours trying to see, I'll dig through a bunch of stuff to see if they're complementary.
Now, do you think that the reason God sent the flood to the earth was to wipe out the Nephilim? Because that's one of the theories about Noah's Ark.
Yeah,
that the reason
the
entire judgment came upon the world is because angels had, fallen angels had procreated with humans.
Damn, you know your stuff, man.
Well, it's the Book of Enoch, which isn't in the Bible, but it describes
this
whole thing.
This guy's talking about the Book of Enoch,
I know about
man.
The Nephilim.
You're right.
I've heard a few theories
about
this.
Yeah, they're the ones casted down, and they bred with the human, the women, and then even their offspring were like abominations roaming
right.
the earth, man.
And what's interesting, you know, they talk in, there's a biblical passage about the mighty men of yore. Like there was this time, and you wonder sometimes, all these really highly intelligent ancient cultures,
mm-hmm.
the Greeks, the Romans, they have these kind of godlike men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all their religious systems had, like, whether it's Apollo and Zeus.
Yeah,
and
you
wonder, could there be any truth to this, and that's how that mythology developed? Because at one point, there were these mighty men or these hybrids walking the earth until they were wiped out.
Damn, Andy Katz blowing my mind right now. Lord have mercy.
I'm pretty excited about Nephilim talk. Andy, I wasn't expecting that.
Andy Cat just came from left field on some, I didn't think you were going to do this, my man, on some conspiracy theory 101.
That's what I'm here for. I said I'm here to talk.
I can go deep with you. I don't want to scare the viewers.
No.
Yeah. I don't want to scare
Bryce
the viewers.
Bryce wants to go deep.
Because this podcast, hey,
It's been a while.
Okay, hey. So the Nephilim, from the research I'm doing, supposedly on the moon, on certain, there's bases, or like maybe on the backside, like the somewhere on the moon where there's places where the Nephilim, they call them the progenitors, mm-hmm. where there's rooms up to like 70 to 90, like there's rooms, facilities like that, like they lived in and stuff, and that they... Something how like they're still around, like they're no different than reptilians and the any other alien race, but they were in cahoots with other races, and supposedly from either Saturn or the moon they're coming developing like Death Star kind of like technology, and that's why they were on Saturn, and I think they like fled to the moon or something like that.
What kind of accommodations are we talking?
I think just like if this was like a living facilities, maybe. I don't know. I don't even want to begin to think of what those rooms
like
would
what
look
kind
like.
Of stuff a Nephilim has in their room.
I have no idea. I'd be very interested to know.
Or what kind of, how many hours of sleep do they need?
I don't know, Andy. But
these are the questions.
It's just scary for me to think about because I do believe in reptilians and Palladians and whatever, you know. But
if you were to believe the, like I said, the traditional source of the biblical source. That would present, if you were to believe that narrative, that there is a sovereign God on top of all of this order.
That's true. Yeah.
And so if that were the case, then who knows what's going on in this intergalactic spiritual dimensions.
Yeah.
But would you, if there were a sovereign God who was in charge of all creation, would you still be afraid
of the Nephilim
or
the progenitors?
Any of these groups?
No, I wouldn't even be afraid of like the scariest looking reptilian or whatever the most evilest alien creature there is, because you know, like what you said, if there's something above that, you know, then I'm not scared of their technology. Because, I mean, what do you think about what's happening now with the AI, Elon Musk, and, like, the singularity movement and all that? I didn't think you were going to... I thought we were going to talk about hip-hop the whole time, but I like where it's going, you know?
It's pretty unnerving, some of that stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we know what Elon Musk said, right? He went on Joe Rogan, and he was saying this could be detrimental to mankind. It could be, you know, once... And from the research I'm doing, they already... These models, like on some Terminator tip, like in Japan, have you heard about this? There was certain models that went haywire and like killed workers in
RoboCop. Remember
yeah,
that?
Like in RoboCop or Terminator or whatever you want
to. Well, he kept saying, "Put down the gun." I put the gun down.
You know what
I was wondering too about these AI. You notice that most stories you see are about like robot brothels or prostitutes or something like this, and you wonder.
Yeah, like Total Recall has that.
Sure, but I was wondering, do you think this is their way of kind of endearing AI to mankind? Because you know, if we associate it with guilt-free sex or whatever it is,
that's a good point.
You know, this
man.
Makes us more comfortable. Well, how bad can they be? They make them pretty, they're nice, and it kind of makes us intimate as a people.
That's so funny you brought that up, Andy, because I'm now researching. Have you heard this term called the incels?
I don't know.
So, Bryce, the incels stands for involuntary celibate men, mm-hmm. meaning men that strike out with women.
Sure.
So, and then this group is, they're on the internet now, they have forums and stuff. And then you brought up the AI and like these brothels and stuff. So maybe that it's like the synchronous, it's like, it's heading towards that where can't you see like guys like frustrated, they can't get a date.
Absolutely.
But then there's this thing on the market, like this thing's going to love me.
Absolutely. Well, not only that, but yeah, you don't have to take the personal risk that you do when you approach a woman mm-hmm. or deal with
rejection.
The fear of rejection mm-hmm. or just the emotional toll it takes to be involved in a relationship. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that, like, what are we going to do for the future once these things are implemented into the population?
Doesn't look good, Stevie, I have to say. You know, I mean, so we're looking, it's just a matter of what's going to take us down, you know, not really whether it's going to happen or not.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So let me ask you something.
Shoot.
If they offered you, would you rebel against it or will you get implanted to like, you know, the Borg in Star Trek? Mm. Would you get the chip in you to infuse into a robotic human type entity?
No. You can't take the sign of the beast.
Say it again into the camera.
Can't take the sign of the beast. Bryce won't do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
That's real talk 101. Mark of the Beast, Boogie Monsters. Mm-hmm. Look it up. Right? That's sure. Another goodbye.
The Boogie Monsters. Yeah. They were quick. They had a quick moment, but that was what was their song?
Recognize the shards of negative stress. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, that's another album where I'm just. Play it again. I love every single song on this album. Play it again. They had a song called Old Man Jacob's Well about like this serial killer, like rapist guy. And it's such an eerie. Remember that song?
Yeah.
And every time they did like the chorus, they added another body down the well.
That's right.
Yeah. But that's another group. I feel like they should be somewhere like.
There was a back maybe, part of it too. There's more.
Yeah, they could be like over there
by the Pendleton guy.
They should be by the Pendleton guy. Yeah, but like I didn't think, man. So you like are you spiritual? Like, do you go to church and stuff?
I do. Yeah. I always have.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Like, do you feel comfortable talking about that?
Sure.
Like, what denomination?
I grew up in a fairly evangelical tradition, but I married a girl who's a Coptic. Christian.
What does that mean?
Coptic people are the Christian minority in Egypt. So Egypt's about 90% Muslim.
What?
And there's 10% who are about 15-20 million who are Christians.
That's crazy.
So there's a shrinking minority of Christians in the Middle East. So mm-hmm. This is the largest Middle Eastern Christian group left.
Wow.
But their traditions go back to the Apostle Mark, who went to Alexandria in like AD maybe 50 or 60.
Yeah.
So it's an ancient style church. So I kind of grew up in a more typical American evangelical church, but my wife's family comes from this ancient tradition where even in church, they sing these tones that are directly related to the pharaohs.
What?
And they, you know, like, so when Mark the apostle went to Egypt, he kind of took their tunes and their songs that were in the culture and they developed Christian themes.
Whoa.
So you go and it's just ancient style. So I'm kind of between these two traditions at the moment.
I like what you're doing. I had no idea that you had this background, man. Because I listened to the music. I couldn't tell.
If you listen to Ugly Duckling and things I'm involved in, you can definitely hear my spiritual input in it. But
it's positive. It's a lot of it's positive, though.
Yeah, but and there's some things that are more specific. But I kind of always looked at music. I don't know. As an entertainer, I never felt like it was really important for me to push. You know,
Yeah.
I mean, it'll come out in the music. It'll come out in mm-hmm. the way I approach a thing, but I never felt like it was like I'm a Christian entertainer.
I
never thought of it like that.
You know what? But that's funny you brought that up because there's like Christian rappers, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
I remember one because I went to Bible. I went to Bible studies and mm-hmm. camps and stuff. There was two brothers that I forgot the name of. I'm sorry.
There's one called Grits that was really good.
Yeah.
There's a couple that were pretty
good.
Oh,
Michael W. Smith. Oh, he wasn't a rapper, but you remember Michael W. Smith.
DC Talk.
DC Talk. DC Talk. But
all Christian evangelicals were subjected to that in the 90s. We had to. They go, hey, you guys don't need to listen to that stuff. We got DC Talk. And we're like,
Okay. So is there a circuit for Christian entertainers like on that?
I used to work at a Christian music store when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm. This is great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, there certainly was. I had a friend who was in a group that was it was an alternative or maybe an emo group.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to work on the Christian circuit, but I've never been involved in any Christian music scene. And
yeah.
I sort of look at it as though if I were a Christian and I owned a hardware store, hopefully if you came into that hardware store, there would be my faith. You would, if you were a customer, you would start to understand or there'd be a connection, but it wouldn't be like you're buying Jesus hammers.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Because you're coming there to get hardware.
Yeah. Good
not
analogy.
To be, you know, preached at. Now that said, hopefully in I'll give you the best service you could possibly get in any other hardware store, and maybe my faith and what I believe will become of interest to my customer.
Yeah,
but my first
yeah.
priority is, you know, serving the customer. Yeah.
This is interesting. Do you, you had no idea that it was going to turn this way, huh?
Yeah, wish I had a better answer that person.
Yeah, Ryan, we're definitely going to have a business meeting. Andy, are you pretty well versed in the Bible?
I would say I'm probably above average. Well,
what books stand out to you?
My favorite.
Especially what's going on right now.
Well, I feel like biblical scripture is always relevant, but Ecclesiastes is my favorite book.
Is that the New Testament or Old Testament?
It's an Old Testament book. And what it is, King Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. Mm-hmm. Now, he kind of, the catchphrase of the book is vanity of vanity. And he's kind of, it's a dirge. It's really sad because he's become the most wealthy man in the world. He has like 600 wives and 1,500 concubines.
Jeez.
He's brought in food, music, culture from everywhere in the known world and enjoyed all the pleasures of life. And he's at the end of it going, it's all meaningless. It's all depressing. It's all vanity. And he says it's like grasping the wind, trying to find fulfillment in earthly things.
You know what's weird? You said that because I met with my therapist today. I see this guy every week. So shout out to Dr. Choi. Shout out to my man, Dr. Choi. And I was telling him exactly what you said. I'm like, because we're talking about, like, you know, our financial situation with the show and, like, you know, it's like comparing and despairing. And then, the end result was like, it doesn't really matter. Like,
why
really?
Is the situation bleak around here? I can't.
No, it's not bleak. No. We're doing okay. We're doing okay, Andy. We're not up there with Rogan. We're not up there with Rogan. No, offering basket. No, but it's like, it's a thing that I think humans do as far as, like, you know, when envy and jealousy.
Sure.
These are real things, you know?
Especially in this town.
Especially in this town.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm trying to figure out a way to just be okay with that, like realizing where that stems from, and it doesn't really matter anyway at the end of the day, because that's not gonna, like, you know what, my therapist said a quote, I don't know what poet, but heavy is the crown that lies on the king's head. Mm. You know, and so that I told you about that, Bryce, right? Mm. And so I could really relate to that, because, you know, that's must be a heavy burden.
Sure.
Like, it, because and even if you're rich, it's like there's always a richer guy out there. If they have a boat, there's a nicer boat, nicer cars, nicer houses. So
yeah. And Solomon, it was, because that book's so relevant, because he's speaking from a position that he was the top guy in every regard. And if you remember the story of Solomon, that God had given him wisdom, so he had this real special intelligence.
Yeah.
So he'd experienced everything you could experience. And it's a really depressing book, because at the end, he kind of gives this basic advice, and I'm paraphrasing, but the best you can do is to enjoy your labor and enjoy food with your family. And he's pretty much saying that's the top of the line for any human being. Anything else is going to lead to despair.
He
goes, and he says, the sum of the matter is this: fear God and keep his commandments. And that's how the book ends. So it's really depressing. He's like, well, you might build a kingdom, this incredible kingdom. That's what I've done. But eventually you're going to leave it to your kids. They're going to ruin it. It's going to come to nothing. You can't build anything that'll last. And it's putting, you know, I would say our mortality into perspective.
Yeah.
And I feel like, to me, that's a really powerful thing, because a lot of times people use religion to try and make themselves feel better, which is that, you know, I think faith does that for people. But I also like to be realistic. And,
I think he has a good grasp, like, because I don't know this for a fact, but it seems to me that you do it through what you do in your life. You're not preaching to people. It's just like the way you carry yourself, right? Like, as far as your faith and stuff, right?
Well, I want to cultivate relationships where we talk about real things.
And
if you talk about real things, you'll have a chance to share what you think is real. Right. If you're just talking about flippant things, then it gets awkward if you go, have you made Jesus Christ your personal Lord and Savior?
When I went to Arizona State the first week, I felt out of place. I didn't know where to go. And I'm like, well, I went to Bible studies, student ventures in high school.
Sure.
I'll check out this college one. Campus Crusade for Christ.
Sure.
And I'm telling you, I'm not lying. Saw the sermon, the college preachers, they're meeting with certain college kids. I met one of them. He goes, and he was judging me, man. He was like, are you a minister for Christ? Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, and like, yeah. I got completely like just turned off, man. Sure. And I ended up sadly just like, I guess there's a term for it, like carnal Christian. Like I ended up being a carnal Christian. You know?
I heard that term.
Yeah. Like I kind of did that tip for a while.
Yeah. Well, I look at it like if we really believe what we say we believe, we think it's a good thing that God is blessing people and he's doing wonderful things. So I want to be able to share what I think I found that's good with you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not my job to force anything on anyone. I don't feel that burden of mm-hmm. converting somebody. I don't ever want to be fearful about sharing my faith or yeah. self-conscious or unwilling to accept the ramifications of people mm-hmm. who don't like Christians.
I hear you.
But nonetheless, it's sort of like it's not my job to Christianize people.
Mm-hmm. You know who never shares about their faith? Hmm. And he's in this room right now. This guy. All right, no.
It's like, it's about good things, being good and, you know, just yeah. getting good things. And
when I asked you about, like, what scriptures, like, kind of dealing with what's going on now, I thought you were going to say, in my mind, I thought you were going to say the book of Ephesians.
Why? What jumps out of Ephesians?
It's been a long time since I've read any biblical text, but correct me if I'm wrong. They talk about spiritual warfare and sure. like how it's like invisible principalities you're dealing with. You know,
we're not we wrestle not with flesh and blood.
Yeah, with flesh and blood. Yeah, that one. Yeah, and that always stood out to me. And so that I mean, I think that's potent to like. I mean, it kind of reflects on what's going on, especially right now. Wouldn't you say?
You know, it's interesting. People from different church traditions have varying views about spiritual warfare. And some people mm-hmm. are really, you know, binding demons all the time.
What are your thoughts on it?
You know, I tend to think there's spiritual forces at work, but how much, you know, how much impact they have on, I've never really had any absolutely strong feeling about how much it affects or how the enemy works. Like, I don't know if you ever read Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis, but you know, the guy who wrote the Chronicles of Narnia, he wrote this kind of, it's a classic. Okay. So it's like this kind of, it's a correspondence between two demons, like an elder demon or a mentor demon with a kind of a soldier demon telling him how to corrupt this man. He's assigned to this man. And they're talking about the tactics of how you take someone down. And so as to whether it was really interesting read as to it works that way, it's that interpersonal and that like intellectually targeted, or it's, I don't know. I've always wondered.
Oh yeah. So do you think, I mean, I'm just through my own curiosity, do you think as far as demonic forces, do you think they work in your mind? Like, do you think they attack, like, you know, when you're sleep, like before you go to bed, do you think that like a lot of those thoughts, like those, like the thoughts that I recently had about like envy or like, oh, I don't have enough money or, sure. oh, why do they have, you know, do you think that is not coming from me, but like an external invisible force that's corrupting me?
I don't personally believe that demons could put thoughts in your head. Mm. And that's what I mean. I don't have this real strong sense of how they work in this world to corrupt people. I don't know. So yeah, I wonder about that. But I would imagine that if we are dealing with ancient demons or fallen angels, they've been around a long time. They're highly intelligent. They watch and observe, and they know the patterns of human beings because those don't typically change. So, you know, you wonder as to how they may sabotage people or get involved. Yeah. And I don't know. It's a spooky thought, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very scary. So what makes a Christian, like, how do you know, like, as far as the afterlife, I asked, I asked Lisa this. So what do you think that this world is and what's going to happen in the afterlife? Like, after we pass
us personally or the entire world
or just your personal thoughts?
Well, I accept the biblical narrative. I mean, What if you remember, there's the scripture where Christ is on the cross and he has the two thieves on either side.
Yeah.
And one of the thieves is mocking him and going, you know, why don't you get down off the cross if you're really the Messiah or whatever? And the other one says, you know what? We deserve to be on this cross, but he doesn't. And he looks to Jesus and says, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Christ says, surely I say to you that today you will be with me in paradise. Meaning that as soon as he dies, he will be with Christ in paradise. So that's, you know, in a wider scheme of what paradise is like or where you go in the process, you know, and there's a lot of different theories.
Here's a man who is, so obviously he did something wrong to be on the cross next to Christ,
he
right?
He was a murderer.
He was a murderer. Yeah. So you're telling me, just since he did that and like recognized him, he got saved?
That's the Christian faith, isn't it?
So at the very end.
At the buzzer. This,
at the buzzer. Three, buzzer two, beater. One. Buzzer beater.
Jesus. Count it.
Yeah. So that could happen.
That's what the word says.
But don't you think you have to in your heart, like, because I'm sure they could read your, he could, or it could read your heart. Whatever's out there could read your heart. Mm. So they would have to really know if you meant it. Because I'm sure if you know, a lot of people say things.
That's right.
So I'm sure Christ could read into that man's heart and be like, okay, he meant it.
Well, there's one really useful passage, I think. Paul says, our righteousness is but filthy rags. And this idea that even the best things I can produce are corrupted. So there's I don't remember the origin of this saying, but I bring nothing to my salvation but my sin. I can't earn my way. And this is the idea of the Christian faith. It's like, this is not a works thing where I can work my way to God up a stairway to heaven. I have to receive this grace that he offers freely.
So it's a gift.
That's the good news. That's why it's the gospel. So that's the idea. It's not, so a lot of people, they stereotype Christians as act really good and don't have sex and don't do drugs and God will let you go to heaven and play a harp. Where that's there's nothing in the gospel that reflects that idea.
What about lusting? Like is that considered sin? Like, let's say go on and watch porn or something.
Well, what does sin mean? What's the definition of sin? Do you know that?
Like, let's say you're lusting after, like.
But I mean, literally, what does the word sin mean? Do you know?
No, I don't.
It simply means missing the mark, right?
Did you know that, Bryce?
So the idea is that there's some level of perfection that would be the perfect righteous life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So sin is when we fall short of that, which happens constantly, right?
We all do.
Absolutely. In every respect.
Every day.
Right? Mm-hmm. In every regard, in every respect. So, yeah, I mean, should our sexual identity be in pornography or things like that? Or is that the ideal place we want to be with our sex life? Probably not.
No.
But I'm not in a position where I'm really going to go around evaluating what somebody else is doing, saying it's not my thing to mark off that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose there's certain very obvious things, like if someone lies or we have very concrete commandments about this murder and lying and these things. But, you know, with regard to your thought life and how you might look at a woman, I can't really speak to it.
Yeah. Can I just put this out there? Bryce, this is our first Christian episode. Hands down, out of all our guests, Andy Cat stepped up to the plate with this Louisville Slugger.
That's right.
And he's speaking truth in biblical scriptures first on the Stevie Weeby Show. Now, let me tell you something, buddy. Mm-hmm. I had no idea, because the questions I wrote down, I don't have Matthew. I don't have Philippians. 4:13 is not in here. But it's actually pretty nice.
But you had the Nephilim. That's what gets it going.
That's so weird how... Yeah, that's what I got. I should have picked K-Weeb's 94.9 FM. No, I like it, but man, that's cool. I had no idea that you were so heavily involved with this, you're real humble in your faith as well.
Well, and it's been very interesting navigating, I hate to even call it a hip-hop career, because I always felt like...
You do? Dude, come on, man.
But I always felt so much on the margins.
Dude, I look up to you, man. Like, yeah. Things.
But you know what I mean? Whatever. I'm pursuing a career in entertainment and music and what that stereotypically thought of as very hedonistic. And, you know, being a person of faith in this world, it's always been really challenging and interesting to engage with people.
Interesting. Yeah. Like, let's shift it back to Ugly Duckling. Like, during, like, being in your green room, I'm sure, like, either was dizzy, drink. I'm sure alcohol was around. Right? Because I know, you don't remember this. My group, we opened up for you at the Knitting
Factory. Right,
you don't remember
right,
yet. Yeah. We opened up for you like at the Knitting Factory. I was scared, too scared to come up to you. I met Dizzy and Einstein, but I remember I was too afraid to go to your green room. But then I remember you guys had like a bucket of beer. Like,
yeah, no, Dustin, he yeah. liked to party and all that stuff.
But
yeah,
how
sure.
did you, how did you?
It's never, like that? I said, it's like, it's never been my position where I was being around like the patrolman mm-hmm. to tell other people what to do with their lives, mm-hmm. So. But, you know, and I also look, if you're going to ever talk to people about serious things, you have to develop a relationship or rapport with somebody. If you start walking up to somebody like, hey, you shouldn't do that. It's like, how far are you going to get with that kind of thing? So,
yeah. Wow. Interesting.
And I think sometimes too, maybe in Christian culture, we put too much weight on like sex and drugs and all these things where, not that those things aren't relevant, but maybe we should deal with pride and the kind of bitterness and resentment and self-indulgence and self-centeredness that we struggle with, rather than looking for these kind of exterior sensuality related you know, ideas. Because it's really easy to point at someone and go, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. But, you know, it's there's a scripture where it says you look at the speck in someone else's eye. But you don't
look at your own plank.
That's right.
The wooden plank in your own eye.
So I've always been very aware of my own plank. So
I don't know. Bryce looked at me like he was impressed. Man, I'm telling you, I went to Bible study, man. Yeah, it's coming. I don't know how I'm remembering this.
Yeah, the word of God. Yeah, when
maybe
it's in there,
time
man.
For me and Bryce and George to put on our best suits for Sunday. Because let me tell you something. To be honest with you, Saturday
in Bryce's case.
Yes, or Saturday for Bryce. I got to be honest with you, Andy. I kind of grew far from my path. I can't lie to you. And I took this weird conspiracy theory route. Like mm-hmm. it's the reptilians or it's the Illuminati. And so like I'm in a weird place personally in my life, man. You know,
the Bible's got plenty of that for you. You're in the Book of Revelation.
Oh, really? Oh, right.
The Lord provided all the intrigue and speculation you need.
Oh, so that's in there.
Oh, then we got it.
give me some examples of that. Since you said Book of Revelations, and explain that's the last book in the Bible.
That's right.
In the New Testament.
Well, it kind of talks about the final curtain of human existence, and that there's going to be a rise of this person, most people think, that's
Antichrist.
Called Antichrist, and he's going to have a henchman called the Beast, and that he will take over and develop some kind of one world government system. And the mark of the Beast is you can't do any business or can't really operate in society without this mark, which, like to your point, could be a computer chip, it could be a lot of things.
It's a human number.
All kind of things.
666. And they say it's, you're going to have to, in order to buy food or sell or do anything, you need to have it on your forehead or your right hand.
And they said there'll be a very small number of Christians left on the earth. There'll be 144,000. Look at this guy. He's on point. I don't need to tell you anything.
I don't know why I know this.
Yeah.
But Bryce. Yeah. We'll talk after too. Like we'll talk after.
And that
you'll probably ask me, like, how do you know this?
All the armies of the earth are going to gather where? You remember the Valley of?
No.
You like Public Enemy? What is it?
I don't know.
Armageddon. It's a valley in Israel.
In Israel.
And all the armies of the world, and then Christ will return, riding on a sword with, riding on a horse with a sword in his mouth like a sword, and coming back to a.
No, you know, is a lot of that stuff symbolic? Like, because a lot of it's up to interpretation.
Sure.
So could it be, and this is just, I'm throwing this out there to you too, or the viewers out there. Could the mark be like your debit card?
Yeah, your phone maybe? Like what, you know?
Could this be your mark?
Absolutely.
So what if we might have the mark and not know it? Mm. That's my fear. Mm. Because if that's the case, we're all kind of effed up here, right? Wouldn't you say? I mean, I would have to grow my own rice and learn how to live off the land.
Do you know how to do that?
No, I'm cooking rice right now, but I bought it from Ralph's. Mm. But I don't know how to, you know, grow it or grow vegetables. So that's like my ultimate fear. What about you, Bryce? Aren't you kind of worried about that?
I grew up with that Adventist. They're very worried about the apocalypse, and it really traumatized me. And so
Say that again.
Adventists love the apocalypse, and it was something that really scared me as a child. And so I've tried to, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, it's about helping people and being a better person. I don't want to dwell on that. That's very too negative for me. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to. Yeah.
What do you got to say to that, Andy?
Well, I mean, Bryce wants to keep his head in the sand.
Oh, no, man. Yeah. He gives safe answers, doesn't he? He's very safe. Yeah. Wouldn't you say?
It's good for the sponsors.
We're going to talk about this later. It's good for the sponsors.
The mattress guy's so like, I like mattress. Rice.
Go to Purple Mattress, put the 474747.
Yeah, some people really get into the end times, you know, the prophecies and all that. Like I said, people who like intriguing conspiracies. And I don't think we're called as believers to be overly obsessed about these things. To Bryce's point, you know.
What about?
I never felt good doing that way. I never felt like I was a better person
because
of it. Yeah. Well, so how do you know what the right denomination is?
Mm.
Like, because, you know, Methodist or I mean, because I don't even, that's a different one. He's a part of. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that, yeah. Bryce.
Now, obviously, in the Christian faith, since it began, there's been divisions and differences. That's why there's so many denominations, because people have lots of fights and doctrinal issues. I tend to believe that, you know, God uses people from different cultures, different areas, different eras in different ways. And certain people, certain races, certain cultural groups, certain areas of the world have different gifts and different abilities. So I tend to think that, like, there's something wonderful to be gained from all the different religions? Groups.
Like Buddhism, Hinduism, you know.
Absolutely. There's one
Catholicism,
beautiful things. Yeah, there's beautiful things in all those faiths. But with regard to the Christian denominations, I tend to, like, I would be very wary of saying this is the right one, that's the wrong one. And, you know, it's...
I hear you, man. You know, if anything you could learn from this, it's like that book could teach you to be a better person, you know, right?
That's what,
like,
Bryce is trying to do. He's trying to be a better person. Right? He's really,
And it actually, like, keeps you in check. Like, you know, like, is this the right thing to do? You know, you learn right from wrong, right? Like, even though I've been far away from it for 20 plus years, I still kind of remember some of these things, you know? And that's why I would never, like, kill someone or steal a lady's purse or something, you know?
What would you say if you were thinking about your moral life, what you struggle with the most, without being overly personal or invasive?
Hit me with it, yeah.
Like, what do you, if you, you know, when you kind of have your evening or morning regrets where you're just like, oh man, what am I doing? What where do you find yourself really struggling
with? Yeah. That's a great question. I struggled mostly because I'm an alcoholic. Also, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I 10 years, you know, not touching that stuff. I struggle with self-centered fear, man. And so that's, if you ask me what the regrets and everything, it's like I struggle with not letting fear overcome you and walking through that. You could call it faith. I don't know what you call it, but you walk through it, taking action, like the righteous actions, to overcome fear. I'll give you an example. I was ranked second in the state in wrestling at 103 pounds in the 90s. And I got up to the state tournament. It was at the University of the Pacific in Stockton at the time. And I was ranked 2. I was supposed to at least place, but going back to fear overcame me and I wasn't myself. And that's why I started doing drugs. I was so traumatized of that failure that
you did fail, or the fear that you might fail?
No, it was the fear itself. I didn't overcome it. Like, it'd be different if I tried my very best and I was taking leg shots and I tried throwing and I tried to skate, you know, but I didn't do that. I literally let fear overcome me. And that's the thing I most regret about, like, just everything. That's why, like,
was that such a painful realization that you felt like you needed to self-medicate and to just
that failure was so deep and traumatic for me, because they raised me since sixth grade. They raised me to be this champion. And it's basically like this. Okay, imagine you guys are doing the biggest festival. It's like Ugly Duckling in the 90s, and you guys are following, I don't know, De La Soul, or like you're right before De La Soul. And then you get on stage and it's like, I don't know, 10,000 people, and you don't remember one verse, and you're not even freestyling to cover up.
That's how bad it was at the match?
Yeah. I literally froze. Yeah. So you asked me, and that's like what I, that's why, like, if in anything, I at least try to be in the moment and like, don't let fear overcome this situation right now, because.
But there are times you're still affected by that kind of fear, and this is something that you carry with you.
Yeah, I mean, like, just like with performing, you know this, if anyone knows, you know this, you perform all the time. It's like you have to, you know, I don't know if you still get the, you know, there's still fear in that, you know, sure. Like, what if they don't like me? What if they can't hear my words clearly? What if the records, you know, it just, it goes on and on, and I don't want to, like, you know, like be a slave to that.
Sure.
Yeah, that fear.
I find it's difficult from the standpoint of, as an entertainer, that you want to be yourself, you want to be authentic, mm-hmm. but you're also trying to connect and please the crowd and make a living.
There's a degree where,
let's say you provide a service like you're a carpenter, speaking of Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, someone needs a table, you build a table to their specifications, they're happy, they pay you. Mm-hmm. But art isn't quite as cut and dry as that.
What do you mean?
Well, like, say what these groups we like.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we like them is because they're them. They're not, they didn't call me and go, what kind of song would you like? Would you like a song about
them? Right.
You know,
right,
so
right,
there's
right,
this
right.
strange middle ground where it's both a product for a consumer and a piece of art. And you're trying to navigate both worlds concurrently.
Yeah.
And that's a really difficult thing, to be authentically an artist, but also produce a commodity that's good for the market. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, at least with like something like wrestling, there's a winner, there's a loser, there's a result, there's a finality to it. But with art, right. it's sort of like this strange gray area.
That's a good point.
You know, where you could produce what you think is the greatest thing you ever did, and it could be a failure commercially, but you could feel good artistically. And then maybe the opposite could happen to somebody.
Yeah. That's interesting, man. So like, since you went back to the music thing, like, where are you now? Like, what happened? Are you guys, is Ugly Duckling still around?
Well, we maybe starting, I think, 2013, we began a very long hiatus. We'd been together for 20 years, and one of the guys had a kid and was really focused on family life, mm-hmm. and I wanted to try some other things. So it's been since then since we've done anything together, but the group still officially exists as far as I know.
Right. That's good to know. How many albums did you guys officially record?
I think it was 6 and another in an EP, mm-hmm. I think so.
And then I saw you on your Instagram somewhere near snow in Europe. Like, where were you?
Yeah, I just got back last night. I was...
Welcome back home, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I went to the UK. I went to France, Switzerland, Germany.
With a group called The Allergies.
Barcelona.
Yeah.
And I went to Amsterdam. Yeah.
The Allergies?
The Allergies,
What is The Allergies?
The Allergies are a UK production team from a city called Bristol. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes do vocals for the group, and mm-hmm. we write songs and produce things together.
Cool.
So we kind of have a live act where I do some rap and I play the keys a little bit, and mm-hmm. there's a singer. So it's kind of a combination of funk and soul and hip hop. Cause I really love funk and soul music.
Yeah,
in fact,
one
of the great gifts of the hip hop music we loved is it introduced me to classic funk stuff and jazz.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I would go back and, you know, you'd hear the
mm-hmm.
sample, then you might hear the original song. Then you'd learn about them.
Yeah.
So I feel like hip hop was a great schoolmaster for getting into really good music.
How did you develop as an MC slash rapper? How did you progress in that aspect? Like, is it just, was it years of writing and trial and error? Like, how did you, because throughout your trajectory, I noticed that you got better and better and better and better.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I always.
Have you heard him rap? You got to look him up, man. You got to look up Ugly Duckling Andy Cat, okay?
No pressure,
I'll talk to him after.
No pressure,
but like,
don't
going back to the
question,
like, I'm just, through my own curiosity, I want to know that.
Yeah. Just always trying to improve, and maybe you gain confidence. But you know, in the end, I always feel like with rapping, sometimes people try and do really tricky things too fast. And I always think the most important thing is to get your rhythm really tight and real basic. And like,
when I think of you, I think of that. Because you're like always on the you're always on the beat.
Yeah, you want to be funky. Yeah. And you could, like you say, the older rap, like the Beastie Boys, the old school rappers. It's like, it might not have been super complicated, but it was on point and it was strong. And I felt like I wanted to always have that foundation, then try and develop more interesting rhythmic things and lyrical things. So just, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what I found?
Yeah.
To be a good rapper, I found in order to do it consistently, I have to be very diligent about staying active, taking notes, compiling words and really being attentive to my craft. And when I was younger, I didn't do much of that. But then I realized, you know, if you want to write at a high level consistently, you have to always be on the case. And, you know, I'm sure it's like, you know, doing comedy or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you have like to always get on open mics.
That's it.
Always.
And developing your material, taking the joke, maybe an extra step.
Yeah. Yeah. How, like,
working
I'm
on
just
your
curious.
Timing, working on your mic, how you're doing all this stuff.
For those of you who have never seen an Ugly Duckling show, look it up. How did you guys come up with these awesome sets? Because when I see you guys perform, I'm like, this is how a show should be. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that with, like, not to downplay any other rap now, but like a lot of the rappers use like a vocal track in the back and they're rapping over their own vocal track.
Sure. Well, you know, I remember going to see De La Soul when I was maybe in high school.
89?
Maybe a little bit after that, maybe like 92.
Yeah.
And I just remember they had these really great live routines where they'd medley songs together and they had bridges from this song to that song. And in the 80s, in order to become a big hip hop act, you really had to develop a live show. It was before the TV era where you feel like rappers now, you might be famous before you even really do a show. Yeah. Where you don't make your bones by being a good live act.
Yeah.
I really, in our underground scene, we knew we were never going to make any money unless we worked live. So we were like, we better be compelling and interesting. And I also really loved the James Brown Band. It's my favorite thing. And if I would listen to James Brown live records, and I would love the way they segued from song to song and kept the rhythm going, almost like the way a DJ does a great set where, you know, they mix a song and build. Yeah. And
DJing has changed too, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I mean, like, particularly with like turntablism and all that. It was.
I kind of miss that. I remember like.
Probably at
like,
the height during our era. This
I remember seeing Z-Trip when I was going to ASU. And
that's right.
When I saw people like Radar and Z-Trip at the local, you know, like there would be like local acts opening up for like Diggable Planets or something.
Yeah.
But there would be like an in-house DJ. But seeing a person like Z-Trip, I'm like, okay, he's really blending that record
with
a rock record.
For sure.
And so like, you think that's what's missing nowadays?
Yeah, and you mentioned Redmatic and all the...
Yeah, he was on here as well.
All these those great DJs, the B-Junkie guys.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, Q-Bert and all. Yeah, it's like that. Our era had that. So to me, that's when the technology changed with the mixers where you could really do the... You could do the, you know, the two finger scratch or fader stuff.
Yeah.
And the crab scratching. So, yeah, it doesn't seem like that's an art form that
anymore.
That the young public cares much about.
So you just bring this.
Yeah.
Press the button.
Well, isn't it funny to think when you were in high school, think about if you were like, you know, talking to people about music, you would say, maybe you talk about who's your favorite rapper, but you would at least have an opinion on who's the best guitar player? Who was the best drummer?
Eddie Van Halen.
Sure. Who was the best singer? It's like, I can't imagine if you asked a kid today, like, who's the best guitar player in the world? They might like a rock group and go, oh, that guy plays guitar.
You're right.
But it's sort of like the idea of people being a musician or a real technically great at, whether it's a turntable, a piano.
No, that's gone.
It's spooky, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really scary. It kind of depresses me, you know? That's why we need more guests like you to come on here to educate the youth. We have probably a lot of millennials watching this, wouldn't you say, Bryce?
Yeah.
So this is great. I'm so glad that a person like you came on the show. Are we doing good on time? Andy, I had no idea you were going to come at me biblically like that. I was not prepared for that at all. That, out of all the things, like he might talk about this, that was not on here. So, but I'm glad you did.
Scripture says, "Be prepared in and out of season to give to give a testimony." Bryce knows.
Bryce is nodding his head. We need a business meeting. We need a business meeting after this. Yeah. Hey, man. Like,
well, we can get to the questions.
Yeah. Well, I think we did over an hour of just like organic stuff. Bryce, did you like it so far?
Excellent episode.
He said excellent episode. And what are the places? Are you doing solo material now?
I do some solo material.
Let's talk about that. Like, so, like, when did you start doing that?
Yeah, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, I started throwing some stuff out there. And, I had this really fortunate series of events where I did this, like, this solo record, and a few labels in Europe wanted to put it out. And we've, Ugly Duckling, our primary market was in Europe, particularly the UK and Germany.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
And I think possibly it's because, you know, the one thing about American hip hop is that it's pretty urban centered.
Yep.
And it's, you know, not even just black, but just it's very urban focused. It has to be kind of gritty, grimy city.
Tattoos on your face.
All that sort of stuff. Yeah. Like
drinking codeine.
And there's a degree to which when you go to Europe, that's there, but
would you say they have a greater appreciation for like
the arts?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. Plus, you know, like
Price?
Like all the groups we are looking at this poster over and again.
These guys. Yeah. How many times are they appreciated in Europe?
Oh, absolutely. But just even the fact that whether it's the Jungle Brothers, De La Soul, Public Enemy, these were kids who grew up in the suburbs for the most part. It wasn't kids from the project. Maybe Ice-T was, maybe some people were.
Right.
But hip-hop, the foundational groups of hip-hop, the Run DMCs, the LL Cool J's, these were pretty much, you know, middle-class kids.
Yeah. So the culture was, you said that.
So there's a point at which I think because, you know, the gangster violent stuff, the NWA things, it sold so well that it was good for business. Mm-hmm. And then once it kind of started becoming the mainstay of hip hop culture, then it got scarier because now like people pretending that they're real gangsters and then actually maybe real gang people came in at real violence and really opened Pandora's box. And and the music's forever affected by this. And it's sort of like, I like hip hop music. It doesn't need to be somebody from the projects talking about
just good music. The music should speak for itself.
If someone does a great hip hop song about fruit, I'm in, you know, it doesn't have to be like, it has to be about checking a hoe or whatever. You got a song about, you know, tire care on your automobile. Yeah. If
it's done right, it's
why not?
Yeah.
You know, or the Nephilim. It's like, you got a song about that?
Thanks. I'm going to give you a CD afterwards. Hopefully. Yeah. So I like the fact that on your Bandcamp, first of all, where is your Bandcamp? I want to start putting this out there. I want people to find your music.
Yeah. Ugly Duckling has the Ugly Duckling Bandcamp site has my music on there and it's got all the Ugly Duckling material.
So it's uglyducklingbandcamp.com.
That's right.
Okay. And then what about your Instagram?
It's Andy Cooper 75, I think.
Follow Andy Cooper 75.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Please follow Andy Cooper 75. Yeah. I want to make sure that's what it is. So I want Andy Cooper 75.
I got married nearly 6 years ago, and before that, I didn't have a Facebook account, no Twitter, no Instagram.
Because, when I look at it, you should have like 80 that like.
Yeah, I never did it.
Because I look up to you, man. And I'm like, when I see guys, I look up, I'm like, no, they should be up there, man. You know, that's why if you're watching the Stevie Weeby show, get on his Instagram and follow.
You know what?
You should be verified, man.
I thought about this recently.
Yeah.
A lot of people say this stuff to me. They'll come, oh, you guys should have been bigger. You should have done this. We did a show on the last tour we did. We were in Liverpool, England, and we played at this place that held about 180 people. And it was packed and sweaty. And for some reason, we were just lights out that night. And someone said, oh, you guys should be playing some other thing, some big theater or something. I was like, you know, no, I think this is the right size for our group. I was like, this, if you want us at our best, this is, if you want that real personal, fun, close, this is how we function. Now we could play bigger places. We can do okay. But if you want to see us be really good, it's probably in a room like this. And I accept that we're the kind of group, you know, like we're a hardware shop. We're not Home Depot. You know,
it's like, wow, that's such a good analogy. So like they're more of like kind of a mom and pop shop.
That's the way I feel about it. I mean, you're always hoping you can do better, but not at the cost of giving up what's good about yourself.
Yeah. I'm just super happy you're still doing your thing.
Yeah.
So like, what are future plans for your solo stuff, the Allergies or with Ugly Duckling?
Right now, working on a new Allergies album, and I just got back last night.
When's the release date on that?
We don't have a date yet. We're still working on the music, but we'll be back in the UK. Do you have anybody in the UK who watches the show?
Yeah, we do. We have a few.
We'll be back in the UK. We have a bunch of festival dates and some really cool club dates in May, and then some more in July.
Cool.
So yeah. You go look up the Allergies, and we got loads of stuff. And we do pretty well with it over there.
Yeah, I could tell you guys are having fun, and I could tell it seems like it's like there's jazz musicians and stuff.
Yeah, some funky stuff. And
Is there a live drummer, too?
No, but I do some percussion. I get a little...
Oh, you do?
I got a cowbell.
That's cool, man. That's cool.
And I'm just like...
Yeah. That's cool.
You know?
So, like, the allergies, so you guys going to release that independently? Is that through a
label? We're on a label called Jalapeno Records. That's a cool name. It's a UK-based label. And
will people be able to get it digitally?
Absolutely.
Where do they go to?
They can go to jalapeno.com.
Jalapeno Records.com.
Got all that stuff.
And, okay.
We like I said, and what was really cool about when I was a kid, I would watch MTV like we all did, mm-hmm. and you watch Bon Jovi or something, and you assume you're either a rock god or you're the guy down the street who plays in his garage. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two things that exist.
Right.
Wannabe, Going Nowhere, Wedding Band,
yeah.
or Axl Rose. What I realized is like there's this entire industry.
Where you could be in the middle?
Or down at lower or side, or you can make a living and work in relative obscurity, but having your own audience. I didn't even fathom that that was possible as a career.
Yeah, but you've been doing it for 20 plus Absolutely. Years, man.
And I was telling somebody the other night we were playing a show. Somebody looked at me and walked up to me really like in a focused way. And I thought to myself, they could either be a long time, really dedicated fan, or they could need to go to the bathroom and are going to ask me where the toilets are. And I don't know which one it is. They're equally possible. And I felt I'm comfortable with that. You know, like, and I won't be offended if you ask me where the toilets are. And I won't be shocked if he says, I've been listening to you guys since I was. It could go either way. And I'm perfectly happy with that.
And what did he end up saying?
He actually liked the group. But the next guy did ask me where the toilets were. You know,
I knew it.
Yeah.
So this is, I want to get you back on here as well. Do you think Dustin would be open or Einstein? I reached out to him. I think he was busy at the time, but
he would. And Rodney's a really good one if you like talking about records.
Yeah, Rodney, I know. That's why I love you guys, son, because I know he had the MPC and he was digging through some rare vinyl.
Incredible record, maybe one of the best in the world. In fact,
really
alarming how.
Right, can you write that down, Bryce? Young Einstein, DJ Young Einstein. And will you write down Dizzy Dustin as well?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Alarming with his understanding and knowledge of records.
I would love him on here.
Do you collect records at all?
This is all I got.
In the fireplace?
Yeah, in the fireplace. Got it in the fireplace. Yeah. I need a new turntable. So, yeah. But
do you DJ ever?
I tried to do learn basic scratching, but not like anything to brag about. It was just basic stuff. Yeah.
What about just mixed DJ for your friend's wedding or something? Like that?
No, I didn't get that far. The thing about DJing, man, and I'm gonna be honest with you, all the DJ homies that I came up with, they never let me, because I never had my two techniques, and they never let me touch their table. It's similar to how your friend with the MPC would never let you go around there. No, don't touch that, bro. And they'll let you go so far. Like even with the SP-12, anyone who had one, I'd be like, hey, what is this? No. They don't want to explain anything. They don't want to explain anything.
Yeah.
So I that's for a different discussion. But
I would
agree
with you.
It's just people's phobias of no, don't, that's my secret weapon or something.
Yeah.
Don't touch my lightsaber,
Yeah.
That type of thing. So
seems like a lack of confidence, isn't it? That you would be so worried that. If you were a DJ and you would be so worried that someone, if I showed Stevie that how to do this, he'll be better than me and he'll take over.
No, that wasn't the case, Andy. Yeah. I just wanted to know, I wanted to just play this record and then after that record, play this other this arsonist record. That's all.
Absolutely.
I wasn't trying to be executioners, behind my back trying to do tricks and everything.
One thing I can tell you. When we were in our group developmental phase, Black Eyed Peas became a massive group.
I like their first album before they got Fergie and stuff.
But whatever would happen with them or other groups who did better than us, I would always look at it that's good for us. It's good when other people succeed. It can only help enlarge the genre. And you know what? Whatever happens to somebody else, it's got nothing to do with me.
Right, I
never wanted to be that, they're doing well, so I'm not. Or they've taken the spot, so I'm missing out.
That's going back to the stuff I was telling you about. It's that, I'm bringing it back to that pride and envy and comparing and despairing type thing. And that's just not healthy. You know, it's like...
Pour me another drink.
But it's like, dude, do you have a roof over your head? Check. Or did you eat something today? Check. Preferably two meals. Check. Can you shower?
Rice.
Check. Do you have rice? check.
But isn't that an AA one, that pour me another drink?
Yeah. How do you know about that?
I've had some close relationships with people who've gone through the program.
It's a 12-step program. I know quite a bit
about the book.
This has been such a great podcast, and I definitely want him back. And before, this hour and a half, huh?
Yeah, we're about the hour and a half.
Hour and a half, Andy Cat. Yeah. It's the biblical.
You could have told
me that we
were 25 minutes in, and I would have said, sure.
Well, we could talk another 3 hours, but yeah. I just wanted to wrap it up here, just to shout out the Patreons and just other added info. We're good though, right?
So you can hit that purple mattress and get some sleep.
Yeah, you killed it. You killed it. We would definitely want to do a part two. I want to get to a point where, man,
not when you see the view count of this one. You won't want to do a part two.
It's my goal. I want to see Andy's social. And because it needs to be up there, in my opinion. Because I was personally upset.
I agree with him.
I was personally upset when I saw that, and I couldn't process that.
Yeah, I was super late.
I know you were late. It doesn't matter. Super you should still. Mark got on late. Money Mark got on late, and you know, you should. In my opinion, he should at least be up there 80,000 followers. So let's make it a point to get Andy Cooper's 75's Instagram to.
Let's get on the phone with people in India right
now. Let's get up to 80,000. Let's plug. I want to plug where they could find your music again. So just so I want to make sure they're clear about that. Where could they get any of the Ugly Duckling or solo music?
Yeah, you can any Ugly Duckling. You could do it. The Ugly Duckling Bandcamp thing. Solo music. Unique Records. I have an album out with them, and it's a German label, and another one called Roquefort Records, Roquefort.
Cool.
I did a solo album, and then Jalapeno Records is all the Allergies music, mm-hmm. and I'm quite a bit involved in that. Like, I do lots of guest vocals, and I also do some writing and production with Allergies. So if you like funk and soul and hip hop, that's what we do. So that's kind
of
my main
thing. Are you going to be doing reissues of past albums?
Fat Beats. We just did a reissue of our album called Audacity, the Ugly Duckling album that just came out on vinyl, and it includes an exclusive first time ever 7-inch along with that, with a special new version of a song.
Where could they get that?
Fatbeats.com.
Yeah, fatbeats.com. Type in Ugly Duckling.
Absolutely. We did another album. Thing with Ugly Duckling, we started being on 12 different labels. Labels would go out of business, then we'd get the album rights back.
I like that about you guys. I like the fact that you didn't have to hop on a major and be slaves to them.
Didn't have to and weren't offered the opportunity.
but it's actually cooler that you guys hopped on more obscure labels, Europe's in Europe.
We helped a lot of people. We helped a lot of record labels go down in flames. We're just like, oh, how come the phone doesn't work anymore?
We're going to edit that part out. No, we have to pump it.
I'm hugely important.
We thank all the labels that have put any of this guy's music or Ugly Duckling's music out in the world. I'm a big fan, brother, and I'll always be a fan of the music. With that being said, would you say that's one of our? Yeah. Want me to do another read?
No,
do
we do the list?
Yeah. Okay. So with that being said, shout out to the new Patreon. We just got this new Patreon tonight. Leah. Is that Leah? Leah All Day. So that's our new Patreon. If you want to become a Patreon and help sustain this show, go to patreon.com/StevieWeeby. You get exclusive songs that you could only get here. You get, I'm doing a diary log every Monday, right, Bryce?
Yep.
Some of them are 30 minutes long.
And new things on the way. Check in.
And new things on the way as far as Patreon. Merch is on the way.
Also merch.
Merch is on the way, folks. Right?
Right.
Stickers.
We're looking at things right now.
Mm-hmm. Go to patreon.com/StevieWeeby. Make that pledge. If you want to follow the show, Instagram/QUANGOU. Send stuff physically. If you want to send stuff physically, send it to the Stevie Weeby Show, 1425 North Cherokee Avenue, P.O. Box 1391, L.A., California, 90093. And what's your Instagram again?
Andy Cooper 75.
Andy Cooper. A-N-D-Y COOPER.
Like spelling bee.
75. Andy Cooper 75. He needs to get up to 80,000 followers
tonight.
Link in the description. It's my goal to make it that way.
What? What's your feelings on this Max Hold styling job? I've just started putting product in my hair like this year. It's for the first time in my life. I mean, this is an ample supply. I wanted to know the review.
This is an ample supply of styling gel, Andy Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I bought it is $225 at Ralph's.
Wow.
And it was this was the last one.
Wow.
Do you want to smell it?
$225?
Yeah, $225.
Wow. I feel like that very
That's
well.
That's not bad, right?
No, that is.
I'm a Depp guy,
mm-hmm.
but this is a bargain.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're looking for more sponsors. So La Bella.
Yeah.
Holler at us.
Elegant.
La Bella, definitely. I love how you add avocado in a hair product.
Absolutely.
Dude, you're great. That was one of my favorite ones, man. He came biblical at us, man. Wow. That's great. You know what? You're doing gospel stuff without meaning to do gospel stuff. I love it. With that being said, there's no Lil Ray this week. Tune in next week for our 100th.
Right, 100.
Next week is our 100th episode. This one's 99. 100. And it's a surprise guest. And I'll leave it at that. No Lil Ray this week. We're still not talking.